My name is Barry Jenkins, and I'm your moderator for this panel, which is called Shooting and Editing, the Non-Scripted Feature. I had to make sure I wrote that down, even though it's about non-scripted feature filmmaking. Mm-hmm. All the panelists on the stage right now actually know each other, so we're hoping to have a very sort of communal discussion, make this thing a family affair, and have these guys who've all worked together share some of their knowledge or their experience, I guess we should say, working in non-scripted features. I guess to start, we'll just have each of the panelists introduce themselves, say their names, where they're from, because when you guys ask questions, you'll have to say your name and where you're from. Just a little thing that we like to do in this family. And their role in feature filmmaking and a little bit of their history with the festival.
Okay. Interesting. We're doing hometown, college? Where are we going?
Hometown, bro. All right. Hometown.
Fair enough. My name is Nat Sanders. I'm from Canton, Ohio. And I'm a film editor. What else do I have to do? Movies at the festival?
Yeah, your history.
Yeah, talk about right. What you brought to South By.
My first time at South By was in 2008 with this man's film right here called Medicine for Melancholy. And yeah. And I was back the next year with Ben with a movie we did called Hump Day. And I think I had some
Freebie.
Movie called The Freebie, 2010. And then I have two here this year called Nature Calls and the Dodeca Pentathlon this year.
Nice. I'm Ben Kasulke. I'm a director of photography. I'm from Saranac Lake, New York. And I've worked with Nat and Barry and Amy in a bunch of different capacities. And I've been to the festival for a couple of years now. With, let's see, Hump Day, The Freebie. I worked a little bit on The Immaculate Conception, A Little Dizzle. I was here with a short called Nightmare. Last year was, I forget. and this year I'm here with Keyhole and Safety Not Guaranteed. Last year I was here with The Catechism Cataclysm. So the festival has been
a
really
very
good.
Very forgettable movie.
Very forgettable. I'm sure all of you forgot it right after you saw it. And the festival asked us to sort of throw this together, and they've been really good to me over the years, so I'm really happy to be here.
I'm Amy Simetz, and I what do, guys?
Where
are you from? Yeah. Oh, I'm from St. Petersburg, Florida. And I produce and act and direct and write and going on and
on. And on and on. You've got a little movie here this year.
I have a movie here this year called Sun Don't Shine. And my first time here was with Medicine for Melancholy as well. And then the next year with Alexander the Last. And what else? And then Tiny Furniture, Myth of American Sleepover, No Matter What last year, and Silver Bullets, and Dish and the Spoon that I produced. Yeah.
Amazing.
Cool. All right. So, so obviously we're here to talk about working in non-scripted features, and I think the fact that we're making that distinction is because it must be inherently different than working with a scripted feature. So I'd just like to hear from each of you how your role is different when you're working on a scripted feature versus working on a non-scripted feature.
Should we start?
Because Amy's a producer and a creative producer type, it might be good to start with the beginnings of these projects.
Yeah. All right. With Joe, with somebody like Joe, who has his own way of working, it really is just in terms of producing for somebody. He has his own way of working. And he's established it so that it's more about listening to what he needs and how to make some of the locations possible and figuring out how to convince people to for you to come in with a camera because Joe really will come up with an idea last minute and suddenly you need to shoot in an artillery. We did that on Silver Bullets. We ended up going to a prop gun warehouse and shooting in it. And I had to convince the guy after I had gotten arrested to let me shoot in his gun place. But really, a lot of that is just being ready and knowing that it's going to be a lot of convincing people and knowing that the process is going to be really open and kind of preparing with location agreements and on-camera releases and just getting ready to put your charm on.
But it sounds like and you'll probably hear this a lot through all of these panelists, it sounds like your job description is much more fluid It's mm-hmm. not, it's not, I take these line items and find the money and plug in the numbers, and then we've got 28 days of shooting, and we know where we are every day, and we know what we're doing, and we have this script that we just somehow need to get.
Oh yeah, I mean, especially with independent films, and especially with the smaller crews too, producing is such an amorphous job. I'm holding a boom, I'm shooting when Joe's in the scenes. I'm, you know, I'm acting, I get thrown in there as well. I'm not, when I'm not supposed to be in a movie. And so producing ends up taking on this amorphous kind of like, you know, jack of all trades. 'Cause even David Lowery, who is a filmmaker, he, him and Joe work together a lot, and David Lowery will come on and do boom. And yeah, I mean, it's you just have to be ready to basically pitch in, because your crew is so small, and that's part of what's, I mean, you guys have worked on much larger improvised things than I have, but that's kind of the great thing about keeping it small and being able to improvise, is that you have this mobility that you don't have with a script.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, maybe that's a good segue into shooting and production in general on this kind of stuff, is that, as a DP, my job is, there's a lot of prep work, but it's not, we need to figure out how to make each specific sequence in this script work and flow and cut on the page. Instead, and this will turn into some crosstalk with Nat, and you'll see that in a minute. The job of a DP in this situation is more like you're trying to like stock a pantry for any number of recipes, and that you are trying to shoot as much as you can to write the film in the edit. And as a DP, my job is much less about getting the most amazing single shot and the most amazing single type of coverage for a scene, and it's more about being a successful collaborator that's looking out for the holistic view of the film and looking out for the edit of the film, which is where I think where Nat comes in, but where I think is like that's the most important part of this, is that if you don't shoot it, you can't write with it. And so you need to, as a DP, I think, just, you need to be flexible. You need to follow along any kind of production logistics that get thrown into the mix. You need to stay open to what the world kind of throws at a project, but and you need to keep a singular vision for what a film is supposed to be and is supposed to feel like and the textures you're supposed to be capturing. But to really successfully do this, I really think you need to be watching out for the edit all the time, both with the director and producer's vision in mind, but with all of the eyes on the most versatile post-production scriptability that you can have.
Yeah, for sure. Because something that didn't get mentioned yet was that working in this style, you pretty much always are shooting two cameras at the same time. So you'll have a scene where you know, two characters are talking, and one is pretty much stationed over one actor's shoulder shooting the person, and then the reverse of that. And so it definitely handicaps Ben in some ways, in that, you know, he, you know, with his lighting setups, he, you know, for one thing, that almost most of the time is not really blocking to the scene at all. Like beforehand, you know, you'll, on a normal big film, you'll block out the entire scene. You know exactly where the actor is walking from. He's walking from this spot to this spot. You'll have the move worked out. They light around that, and you know, sometimes to where, you know, the lighting or the boom or anything can be set up to where it's, you know, can be just out of frame, mm-hmm. so you can kind of be very specific with it. And on Ben, you know, the way Ben works on these movies, everything is left open. You know, there's really no blocking at all. The actors are given total freedom. It's basically kind of reversing from, you know, I think one of the big benefits on bigger movies, a director that we work with says, you know, she feels like on the big movies, you spend 90% of your time lighting, and then the actors have to come in and just nail it in 10%. And the real process of working together with the actors is so rushed, and you spend all this time in the setup. And this is really about reversing it to where, you know, that setup is such a small part of it, and you're allowing all that time for the actual process to happen on set, and which is great. But definitely, you know, Ben, you know, it's basically what you're pre-lighting the night before, and then
or you know, you get a very rudimentary blocking, mm-hmm. And yeah, what mm-hmm. you're saying, Nat, is that I think all of the importance in the onset process has to give way to performance, and if you're not getting the performance right, every ingredient you have to make this film is out the window. It doesn't work. And so the hope is that you are allowing actors to do what they do best, which is perform and find moments and catch lightning in a bottle. And it does affect very much the technical aspects of the cinematography. You can't put your lighting instruments where you want them. You can't get the best possible shot because you have two cameras pointing at one another and trying to keep camera operators out of the frame. But you're favoring performers. You're allowing actors to talk over one another. You're allowing actors to improvise, and you're allowing people to interact like the people that you hear every day in your life, and they're not. You're not pointing one camera at an actor and asking them to stop talking so they won't be talking over the audio from the next character that you don't have a camera trained on. And the hope is that Nat ends up with a bunch of footage. And I say Nat just because we've worked together on a lot of these. But the hope is that you end up with a bunch of footage that is, for the most part, great. Mm-hmm. And you can do something fantastic with it.
I just realized that we're supposed to break down, you know, what each one of us does. Mm. You talk solely about the editing. I talk solely about the way you shoot these movies. But.
That's probably indicative of a deeper issue in our relationship.
Potentially. But before
we move forward, though, I think we should take a small step back and just talk about the actual story, storytelling. Yeah. In this sort of form of feature filmmaking, I think when you say non-scripted, you sort of infer that there's no story thought out before the shoot. And hearing you guys talk, it's all about creating all these moments that are then written in post. But there is some sort of story architecture created beforehand. It's just not scripted. So I was wondering if you guys could talk a little bit about that.
Mm-hmm. You had pretty good things to say about this. That
No pressure.
No pressure. Though. I'm going to just stare until you talk.
They were really good.
Yeah.
On one hand, with Joe, he has an idea of what he's going to shoot, and with Silver Bullets, that idea morphed over a period of 2.5 years. Started out as one idea that was completely different, but the thing about Joe is that he sticks with it and finds the story. Keep shooting until he finds the story, really. And then he gets the ideas of where the story's going, and then he starts placing everything. And not only that, but that's just with the movies that I've worked with him on. He changes his process all the time, because that's what you can do when you improvise. Is you're like, this is working now, and I'll go for that. But we did a little bit of improvising on the Dish and the Spoon. Allison allowed Greta to do a lot of improvising on that. But Allison had a really solid script in place, mm-hmm. and obviously Greta's very talented at being extremely emotional and extremely hilarious at the same time. Yeah. And so we were able to, within the context of this very structured story, allow Greta to just kind of go wild and on certain takes. And we would schedule a whole day around letting Greta go wild. And we scheduled that movie based off of emotional scenes. The script was so non-traditional. It wasn't in a final draft or anything. It was just a Word document it was really beautiful. It was prose. Allison had written this really beautiful story in prose, and we followed that, and I broke that down into, I numbered that. I lined, had a proper line script based off of her prose. So it's just basically creating a schedule so that you can, figuring out what's important. And for that, it was important to know that Greta was going to have to do a series of really hard emotional scenes in a day, and that can be really exhausting.
So it sounds like there's a... Sorry, Nat.
No, go for it.
It sounds like there's... There's maybe an assumption that if we're going to... Let's get together and make a movie without a script, we don't need to do any preparation, and that's like totally not the case. I think that you actually have to prepare what's truly important in these movies more, which is you need to work with your actors and you need to work with your story. And it sounds like that's... You guys worked with your story and figured out what was best for that film.
Mm-hmm. And not only that, but it's nonstop work. Like you have your story in place, but then in terms of the hours that you put in, we were up every single night, and a lot of these just discussing where the story goes. Right. So the script process is like, it's all morphing as the movie develops. And also the great thing about that is that you don't have to stop shooting until it's really good. Until you're like, that was a really great performance, or that was a really great shot. You know, you can go run off and shoot like sunsets or whatever, because you don't have to.
Yeah. And maybe on a scheduling note, like you're not shooting an 8-page day. you're shooting maybe with Allison or maybe with Joe or maybe like we were doing with Hump Day, we would shoot a few scenes. We didn't know how many pages they were going to be because the takes would run for 40 minutes and then we would do notes and the takes would run for another 40 minutes and kind of check in and see if we had enough for an edit. And I think maybe you guys did some similar things.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And just in case we skipped it, like, you know, in a regular movie, you would have maybe, say, like a 90-100 page script, whatever it would be. And a lot of the ones, there's, you know, different types of improv. I've cut a movie for the Duplass Brothers. Their style of improv is they write a script, but then they get on set, and the actors have memorized that. You know, actors will really internalize their performance by memorizing the dialogue beforehand. But they'll throw the script out on set. So the actors still have it memorized, but they'll really be feeding them lines in the moment. They'll say this, say this, say this. And the actors will just kind of be in character and be in the moment and repeat it. But that's one style. But one that Ben and I have probably done the most would be more like just it's really a short outline that's really just laying out. And I know that's what Larry mm-hmm. David does with Curb Your Enthusiasm and similar things where mm-hmm. you really just have a beat by just scene by scene and laying out the beats. You know, it's going to go from point A to point B to point C within the scene, but none of the dialogue is written. And so the way we've worked, a lot of times you're really casting, I mean, a lot of these movies you're casting other filmmakers who can act in the parts because you really need people who kind of have a story, who can act and be in the moment with maybe say 90% of their brain, but then with 10% of it, they can still have that writing aspect going, that knowing that they have to get it from point A to point B, that it's not just about going off on these huge tangents.
I'm curious with you guys, with your relationship. Sorry, I'm taking over as moderator, Barry. Just to let you know.
That's
I
all
tend
good.
To do that. This is my show now.
I've known Amy since 2000, like 2002, 2001, so she can do
we
this
were
to
like
me.
18 or 19, yeah. I'm curious, like, on a technical side, because you have these actors running around, and you guys would be able to talk about this more than me, even actors running around, and you're allowing them to take up a space. Can you talk on a technical side of, like, crossing the line, and if you pay attention to that, and what the rhythm of the scene is? Sorry, did I take it? Did I take that?
No, I'm just...
Oh. I don't know what that look was that Barry gave me personally.
I saw Barry's notes and I just asked that question to make me sound smart. I don't even know what crossing the line is.
You heard somebody say that once?
I have no idea what the fuck that is. Are we allowed to say cuss words in here?
No.
Okay.
It's going on the internet, but whatever.
Ben could probably speak.
Yeah, I mean, and it's an extension of that idea of looking out for the edit. I mean, like, I'll always... With a film like this, if someone comes to me with a project and they're like, this is based on performers, we're casting specifically people that we think embody these characters, and we're working on finding moments in performance. We're not working on getting every element of this script onto a page, and that's the be-all and end-all of this film. For me, capturing those performances is part of that. I'm providing for the edit, but... I've done enough of them now where I can tell when something's not on the right side of the line. And I can tell when, you know, and this gets into maybe a bigger thing, which we can talk about in a bit, but it's a lot of these films can turn into two characters enter a room, drop anchor, start firing lines at one another. And that's very easy. There's like 110 years of film editing grammar and camera placement grammar that makes those edits work. Once people start running around, then it gets a little more complicated, and it only really gets more complicated in that you add camera setups, you know. And it's I feel pretty good about not crossing the line, but I feel like if some people are here and thinking about trying this, that the best way to really learn is the hard way, and it's to shoot your own footage and try and edit it, and right, make some big mistakes, mm-hmm. and then learn from them.
Well, what do you think about that?
No, definitely. I mean, that is definitely, you know, I feel like editing is definitely probably the best way to learn about filmmaking. All the problems fall down to you, and you have to deal with them. You have to learn what went wrong, and you know, you have to figure out how to fix it. And but yeah, I mean, definitely there's lots of times where, you know, all these things will happen on set, but, you know, say that if somebody, a sound person, you know, wasn't doing it right, and, you know, usually you'll try to get word back from, or whatever the position is, a lot of times word doesn't get back, and sometimes they don't find out about their mistakes. But what was I gonna say? We talked about two cameras. So just to recap, like with editing, you know, the way it's different for me in this style is that, you know, rather than getting, you know, get these, you know, on a scripted movie, you'd get, you know, four or five, six, however many takes, that each one will just be like a minute and a half long. It'll just be just the dialogue and they just banged it out. And this, you know, you'll get, sometimes we'll be rolling for 30 minutes at a time, and it's just really, you know, this digital, so you're not burning film, and you just let it go. And especially in the early takes, while you're still kind of trying to find it. And and the actuals just go. And so it's really like cutting the documentary. You're really going in and finding the gems. And this whole way of shooting and way of working is really kind of about the spontaneous. It's finding like the lightning in a bottle. It's that magic moment that's really going to happen once. And it's amazing when it happens. And that's why you have to be rolling two cameras, because you want to make sure that you have, you know, you say somebody's doing something incredible on this one take. You want to make sure that you're going to have the reaction shots from the other person covered for the dialogue that they're putting out. Because if you don't, if you try to go back and get it, it's just never... What we found is this never good the second time.
You
just,
it's
what all you about both talk moments. About lightning in a bottle.
Yeah.
Have you ever seen lightning in a bottle?
I've seen footage of it.
Because I'm wondering what that's like. It sounds really violent and scary.
Mind,
I don't want to touch it.
Like, yeah. Hey, lightning in Florida.
Well, you know, I want to follow up on something Natty said, or something that we talked about before, which is sometimes you'll get this mass of footage and then you find that one thing, the lightning in the bottle, and then you have to go back and build everything around that bit of lightning in the bottle. So
yeah,
even
definitely.
Though you're not shooting coverage beforehand, you're not doing multiple camera setups, mm-hmm. you kind of have to then build the coverage afterwards when you find this sort of glory stroke.
Yeah, for sure. Like normally, if it's scripted, I would just go through and look at each take and just find the best line reading for each take, and it's just kind of dunk and drop. You just put them in your timeline. Just kind of going from
script
one,
even.
Just going from one line to the next and just find the best take for each one. But in this way, it's I've kind of modified as I've gone along, kind of found the best way to do it. But I've got to the point where I just take, it really is kind of about those magic moments in this way of working. So I'll just take every moment that's special that just kind of pops out, that just kind of says, you just kind of start to learn how to see those moments that just kind of leap out and just jump off the screen a bit and just feel like this should be in the movie. And as I go through, just put every moment that pops, just kind of put those all into a timeline, try to put them chronologically in the way that you think the scene should run. And so I'll have this huge timeline, about 30 minutes long for just one scene, and then you just kind of just go through and just keep doing passes and just kind of refine it, and trying to get, you know, from one great moment to the next, and just find, and you know, and that makes it sound like they have no idea what they're doing on set. They definitely have their progression and everything worked out. But
well, that's interesting though, because you're not, and this is probably a great thing and a bad thing. It's probably a great thing in the sense of like not having an editor on set is as good for a film as not having a DP in the editing room, mm-hmm. but. It's interesting to me that if you're not on set, you're not privy to the, and Amy can probably talk about this as well, the emotional progression of, we did a 40-minute take, this worked, this didn't, this felt like total BS, and this felt mm-hmm. like the truth of what's going to press this movie forward, mm-hmm. and this feels like what's going to keep the characters engrossed at a 60-minute mark in a 90-minute film. And you know, I think, Amy, if you've done this kind of stuff, you know what those decisions are, and you know about all of the conversations that are had every night about how we're going to take this movie that we wanted to make and let it grow and let it be what it's supposed to be, but not just be a free-for-all of any idea that, you know, the kitchen sink kind of thing. But you're not privy to that. You're privy to the footage that comes to you.
Yeah,
which is
sure.
really,
and 95% of it is usually terrible. And like you would never use 95% of it, but it doesn't matter because, you know, if they shot 3 hours and it's only a 3-minute scene, I'm not going to do I don't know the math quick enough in my head to know that ratio, but it doesn't, you only need a very small bit of it to be great. And so if 5% of it's great, if 2% of it's great, it's usually going to be enough and that'll be perfect.
But, yeah. And then if you've done your job right, and as a producer and as a DP and as a director, you've allowed for that space and you've kind of curated this situation that allows that 5% to be great.
Mm-hmm.
And then a bunch of scenes in a row that are just the 5% of the best it's interesting.
Yeah, but we should talk about that 95% and that, because mm-hmm. I feel like right now we're really glifying the non-scripted feature.
Sure. We're really great filmmakers.
and the non-scripted feature is awesome. There's something very impactful and unique and that aesthetic approach. But there's the other side that also has its benefits as well. Ben, I wanted to ask you a question first. There is a stigma about the sort of non-scripted feature as it pertains to the cinematography.
Yeah.
We were talking earlier about how you can't light, you know, each shot to look its best. You have to sort of create a room that's open enough for the actors and the director to have total freedom.
Mm-hmm.
That limits, in some ways, what you can do aesthetically with your camera. So I just wanted to talk
about
that.
Yeah, it limits quite a bit. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's... you know, there was a method that has come out of maybe Hollywood filmmaking, but a method that's come out of most feature filmmaking that has been refined over the years. That is, you block a scene, you rehearse a scene, you shoot a scene, and the knowledge that you acquire from watching that process happen as a DP lets you really craft an image. When you walk into a production situation and actors are moving all over the place and you can't see any of your lights and you need to have two cameras going and you can't see another camera operator and you need to place a lamp for the A camera right where the B camera is standing, it's very difficult. And you I go into these and I keep trying to find a way to make them better and make them feel more like an image that I've crafted within the frame, not with camera settings, but with lighting and with camera placement choices and coverage. And it can be very, very difficult. And it's hard because, you know, I've returned to South by quite a bit with films like that, and they're amazing performances and the films are fantastic and I'm very proud of them. But a lot of times I do look at them and it's like, this is not really exemplary of my ability to tell a story and create the world of a film within a frame, because I'm just capturing a performance, and it is a little tricky, and there is a stigma about it. And I think, coming here for years, to be like totally frank, it was like people would be like, "Oh yeah, you know, you worked with Lynn Shelton, you worked with Katie Duplass, and you've done these kind of improv things." But then I do stuff that's like on the total other end of the spectrum, and it doesn't really make it here. And it's not a judgment call on the films.
Yeah, but I remember that short film I saw in Seattle that you'd done, the fairy tale, and I was like, "Oh, oh yeah, like, man, yeah, this is crazy."
It's a totally different. Yeah, it's like you're watching a totally different
thing.
Yeah. And so, I mean, it's
the same guy.
But it's the same guy. Thing. It's a Gemini. But I saw the I would feel like I wasn't progressing as an artist or whatever, not to sound awful about it, but as a DP, I would not feel like I'm progressing if I cut this stuff out of my life.
No, and so now I'm going to extend that to you, my friend, also. Yeah. What are the disadvantages?
Disadvantages
or the limitations of working this way for your craft?
Yeah, for sure. Sometimes, especially like with the writing, just because that's a lot of what we're doing in the edit and the style of working, sometimes you just really can't, you know, you get that great, like really naturalistic performances that people, I mean, some people, hopefully maybe some people in this room, like you really respond to it. Like, it feels really naturalistic. It feels really, like real people that you know. And, which is great. But a lot of times sometimes you miss that kind of pointedness that you would have in the writing. Maybe not even with even story, because with story, they're kind of being very, aware even during the shooting. Hey, it's already outlined anyway, but then even during the shooting, at the end of every day, they're getting together and having story meetings like, okay, this veered in a little different direction from what we had planned. What are they going to be the ripple effects and the repercussions of that afterwards? And so they're kind of constantly rewriting story at the end of every day and in the middle of scenes as they're shooting, which is great. So all that stuff is on point, but just kind of those little pointed moments, like those little things that, you know, you plant a seed and it pays off later within the dialogue, a lot of those things get lost. Like, you kind of don't have that pointedness sometimes, because, you know, so much of it's in the moment. And that would just be on a different level if you could really plan for that.
So you're talking more about like structural storytelling elements that you would see in like a crafted screenplay. Like if someone sits in a room for 4 or 5 months, makes something, and then, you know, you on repeated viewings, you catch these subtleties. That's what you mean. Like,
for sure. Yeah. In that vein, definitely. And then also, let's see what else. I mean, a lot of it, you know, the way it's shot, it's really not, you know, let's do a wide, let's do, the mediums, let's do this, like, you know, these very stylized shots. Is really about, you know, just shooting a conversation a lot of the time. So it's just different editing muscle where you're really just like solely cutting for story and performance and kind of choosing. I've noticed that a muscle of mine that's definitely underdeveloped as an editor is like shot selection, how to really work a room, like when I go to scripted things, of like, you know, going between the wide and into the close up into the medium and kind of just working the different angles around the room, just because with this way of working, that's like almost just off the table. It's just shot, you know, because it's just about that one time that it's going to be great. And that magic take, that magic moment.
How humble
is this panel? I mean, these guys have like 8 features, like at festivals all around the world, and they're talking about their limitations of their craft. I love it. I feel all joyous right now. Mm-hmm. But put it back to the positive now. Because even though I'm like the least non-scripted filmmaker on the panel, I have the least experience at it.
But that's why you're here.
I did attempt to make a short in Miami this past spring, mm-hmm. in that style. And I went down there, non-actors, and made the short called Chlorophyll. And man, I had the best time making this thing. I mean, it was just so pure. I can't get it screened anywhere. Nobody will accept this film. But making it felt so damn good. And I was talking to you guys earlier, and you guys were just going on and on about the feeling of working on films this way. So I just want you guys to talk a little bit about how working in unscripted has sort of affected you guys as artists and storytellers.
Mm-hmm. Okay. You going? I remember, I don't really have any desire to be a director, but I remember when I did direct back in film school, my sets were, I could just tell, I could just read it in people's eyes, my sets were without a doubt the least fun, the most high stress. Nobody enjoyed working on my movies whatsoever because I was trying to create exactly what was on the page, what had been in my head. I was trying to recreate that exactly, and I was so stressed out the whole time, like this was off and this wasn't exactly 100% what my vision had been, and I just stressed everybody out and made it a miserable experience for everybody involved. And just through being on these movies and from seeing how they work, they're just such like a really collaborative, organic experience. Everybody's got a voice and everything. It just allows the world to come in. You know, if it's raining that day and it wasn't supposed to, you just find a way to make it work. And it's just such a better way of making movies to you know, you still have, without a doubt, have directors that have a vision and you're not compromising that at all, but you're allowing the world to come into it, which is such a more organic and just better way, in my opinion, to make a film.
Yeah, before I shot the film that I'm here with, I asked Joe, we were shooting night shoots on Your Next, and I had shot a couple movies with Joe, and he never gets stressed out, ever. It's unbelievable. And so I asked him, because I was going through a really stressful time personally in my life, and I was thinking about shooting Sun Don't Shine, and I was like, I don't know if this is really, maybe it might be the worst period of time to shoot a movie. And so I asked him, I was thinking in my head, the only way I can shoot this is if I'm not stressed out. And so I asked Joe, I was like, do you ever get stressed out? And he's like, no, never. And I was like, really, never? But it's really because there's a freedom in that in your brain when you are improvising that or shooting an improvised film, that you, it's okay to fuck up because you just do it again. And it's, God, I keep dropping that word.
again?
So bad. You mess up a lot. So you can mess up and it's fine, you know? I'll get G-rated. And even in the directing of it, it's like an idea that you have and you try it out. And maybe it's stupid, but on set you're like, you know what? It's like a free game where everyone's allowed to say that it's like, that was really bad. Like that was really bad. And you can start over as opposed to like going back to the page and being like, it has to be this way. Why isn't it working?
No,
you just
not,
go, no, let's scrap
right.
it. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, for me, it's more like, it just opened things up as a filmmaker or a storyteller or, you know, whatever you want to call it, whatever got me here as a DP. It's just, there's an openness to the world and I am more interested to see what the universe kind of throws my way as a person and as a filmmaker. And I think that it's much more interesting and, you know, sort of like Nat was saying, you know, you just take what the world throws at you and the
I
best
think you'd
you
even
win.
Said those things to me and I just stole your answer.
It's good. Yeah, yeah, no, I'm into it. I'm into it. We're coming back to that relationship thing. But there was something else I was going to say.
Oh, sorry.
But
man.
Now you threw me off.
Fuck.
It's okay. Oh, I do know what I was going to say. You know, that there is this, the sort of ace up your sleeve as a filmmaker and working this way is that you've got a whole history of human beings sitting down in a movie theater to watch a narrative feature film, and they are conditioned through whatever type of film theory and human experience and 100 years of cinema to think that every single decision that director or screenwriter or editor or DP made was intentional and was curated and was what Nat wanted to be in film school. Mm-hmm. What you wanted that set to be. You wanted, you know, you had, I'm going to make X. That's my film. Mm-hmm. Nobody in that audience knew what you went through to make it, unless you let the cat out of the bag with an early interview or something. But so it's interesting. There's this tension of, we're open and we're kind of got this like free love approach to whatever the universe throws at the film and the best idea wins. But the other side of that, the sort of receiving end of that is, whoa, you made that movie. How did you write that script? Those people sound like the people next door. And I never would have come up with that ending. I thought you were going to go totally somewhere different with that. Or I'd never seen a story that felt so natural but wasn't structured in five acts and every 30 minutes was like another, you know, ABC move. So it's a bigger, you have an ace up your sleeve and it's cool, but it also allows you, I think, to grow as maybe as a storyteller. For me, it allowed me to grow as a person. Like I don't think this needs to be. Oh, I know, right? We got to end on that. No questions. Yeah. Anyway, I'm shutting up.
Yeah, and I mean, obviously, we have no vested interest in the future of improv films, or you know, forever, you know, writers or directors or anybody that's out there. You know, we're not trying to give like an infomercial on making improv films or you know anything, but. But the one thing I would say is what we're talking about is really almost – it's kind of one extreme end of the filmmaking spectrum. You know, it's really – you know, I mean, I'm sure people – there's some precedents in the past, but for the most part, this is something – fairly new that, like, you know, these micro-budget American films have started doing maybe in the last 7-10 years.
Yeah, right? I mean, outside of, like, the sort of the Cassavetes Godfather idea, but, like...
Yeah, a few here and there, and...
No,
I think that's a nice tangent. I mean, we're at South by Southwest, and this has been sort of an incubator for this style of filmmaking, for sure. But I think the rise of digital technology, too, is directly tied into it. It's funny. Amy's film was shot on Super 16, Sun Don't Shine, that's here. I know, right? Glorious emulsion. But we were talking with Amy. I was like, oh, there must have been no improvisation in that film. And she got so giddy. She was like, no, we did improv, and we did. It felt dangerous. It's because we were burning money. Can you talk a little
really
bit about
dangerous.
That? but can you guys talk about just the freedom?
We're making a dangerous film, though, too. No, I mean, it's a very scripted, and my movie is very scripted, but then Kate and Kentucker also are brilliant people. Kate Kentucker, who's the actor in my film, Kentucker Godley, who did Team Picture and Open 5, and Open 5 too. He made a sequel to his own movie. That's brilliant.
That's incredible.
I think it's hilarious. And Kate Scheel, who's in Silver Bullets and like 17 films this year, sometimes.
Yeah, ridiculous.
In the comedy and Bob Byington's film. Mm-hmm. Anyhow, she's a really fantastic improviser too. But we were shooting on 16, and a lot of the films that are improvised these days are on digital, and it felt like we were doing something bad, like something that someone told us never to do, which was waste money. That's what it felt like. But when the camera was rolling, and a lot of times on set you're rolling these 7Ds or 5Ds, and it's almost like you're not shooting a movie, which is a benefit to performance from my experience. But then when we pushed, you could hear like we pushed record on our Super 16 camera, you could like hear the film going through, and it was like the pressure was on. And Kentucker, who is not a trained actor, but just a charmer and a performer by nature, was just like on, like spot on, and improvised, and like we just got gems, I think, because the pressure was on, which is the complete opposite of what we're saying. So there's actually no rules to improvisation is what I'm saying.
Mm-hmm. Well, something also we haven't talked about is that it's definitely not for like every genre of film that you really can't do this. You know, something like maybe
an improv action film.
Yeah. Like action film, horror film, like some of those things where you really
I did an improvised horror film.
Yeah, I did a semi-improvised sci-fi film.
I did.
All right, well, shut up.
Yeah.
But
there's limitations, which you're probably going to talk about.
Yeah, for sure. Definitely limitations to that way of working. So anyway, you know, if we were given any sort of infomercial or pitch, you know, it would say, you know, everybody, we wouldn't say, you know, everybody go out and run and make an improv film, but maybe if you take away anything, it would just be that, you know, there's ways to get to incorporate that, to get these kind of like the great naturalistic performances where it feels like real people rather than kind of having these canned, you know, obviously like the ideal is that you write lines of dialogue that sound very naturalistic, but it definitely doesn't always happen that way. And this is a way to really have it feel like real people. And just, there's ways to incorporate the style of working into if you were going to have a scripted feature as well, to just try and make it feel, get them more organic.
Well,
feel
you got to cast smart people too. That's a big, you got to cast people that you like their taste too. Like you can't just cast somebody and expect them to just know your story. And I mean, and honestly, I think that part of Joe's success is that he casts writer, directors, and actors, like people that know how to tell a story and know that you don't necessarily have to have laugh out loud moments all the time, which is actually really hard to do when you're improvising, is to not go for the comedy, but to find a way to have moments where there's silence. And well, a lot of the films, you know, there's this pressure to fill up silence, but and it's a real skill set to understand how a movie moves, and you have to have people that understand the whole process of editing and filmmaking and writing in order to get a really good improvised performance.
It's that sort of like holistic look at, like, is this good for the film? It's not, is this good for the performance? Is this good for the shot? Is this good for the edit? It's are we making the same movie? And like that comes back to that prep work you were talking about, which is really vigorous, and the rewriting that's really vigorous on set, and then the real writing, which is really vigorous on your edit.
Mm-hmm.
Is that question time? I think it might be. I think we have a microphone coming forward. People have to say where they're from, right?
Yes, your name and where you're from.
That's going to be good.
Hopes and dreams.
Hopes and dreams. What you have for breakfast this morning, what you have for breakfast tomorrow. All that good stuff, the important things.
They're getting it ready.
Well, as the microphone comes out, I was thinking of something, too, that that I was thinking of how in film school you taught, film is a beautiful medium because of the collaboration. And I think the way you guys work, one of the things you take away is, yeah, you have the finished film, and it screens at festivals, and people can see that and consume that, and that's great. But I think also, too, the experience you guys seem to have, especially the two of you making the films together, is this whole other piece of product or currency. It's this very tangible thing that you guys can take away from these experiences of making those films. And I think you don't get that on a much bigger sort of like a construction blueprint kind of scripted film filmmaking process.
Well, there's a crosstalk. Maybe Nat and I have done a lot of these, and maybe to a degree sometimes we've been hired on the same project because we've done it before. But you know when we don't have a scene and you have full reign to walk onto set and be like, we don't have this scene, or you know after a couple of misfires between the two of us that we don't have a couple cutaway shots or some establishing shots that I would never think to shoot because they weren't in the script that didn't exist. And the script that's starting to exist is happening in the edit.
Yeah, for sure. And a lot of times, you know, we'll have, you know, there's no money on a lot of these things. We'll be bringing the actors in. Say we shoot in some of them in Seattle, bring the actors in from LA. There's no money to rehearse beforehand for a week. So they're coming in 12 hours before the first shot. So for those first couple of days, everybody's kind of finding their way. They're kind of finding their characters. So a lot of times we probably end up shooting at least the first two or three days. A lot of time we shoot like a third of the stuff, or you know. So I'll be cutting during production. On the second day, I'll be cutting the first day's footage, trying to keep up. And we'll kind of just see right away the scene. We don't have this scene. The scene didn't work, or we don't have the shot. And then just kind of right away go and say, let's add it to the schedule right now, rather than trying to bring everybody back months later for reshoots when there's no money. It's really probably realistically not going to happen. Mm-hmm. So.
Yeah, or like you've probably worked on things where they've had to wrap shooting, edit for 6 months before they send up a red flag, and it's like we need to write scenes, we need to write a screenplay that fills all these plot loopholes. And really stressful.
A lot of times the actors aren't into it; like they just are frustrated. Like, oh, I already did this scene, or you know, whatever. They don't want to come back months later. They've moved on. They're not in their character anymore. Yeah. So a lot of times, if you do that, try to reshoot that way. It's never great anyway.
But if you're constantly reworking these scenes every night. And everybody's talking about whether or not they're making the same film. Mm-hmm. You have a crosstalk, you have a place to go back to, and you have questions from the audience.
All right, questions.
Your answer.
Yes.
Okay.
Well,
is this on?
What?
Hello?
We had a football, because this is Texas, going to bring.
Hello?
We were
okay,
going to throw it to you to ask questions, but... Could have been a loss.
All right.
Where are you from?
Oh, okay. I am from Penny in New York, currently residing in Geneva. But
wow.
My parents live in Geneva.
We're going international on this panel.
Okay, so I'm working on making a feature that I'm hoping to shoot sometime this year. And that right now I'm in the process of sending out the script. And one of the people that I sent it to is the deputy director of the film office in Rochester. Mm-hmm. And hopefully I'll be meeting with her sometime after I get back from this. And I guess she liked the script and everything. But she had a conversation with my friend's brother who works in the film office for... Well, I'm sorry, he doesn't work in the film office. He worked in Rochester film production. And I guess the conversation they were having is that my script is 160 pages and sort of operating from the convention of one page equals 1 minute of screen time. And, I'm not operating from that mentality at all. I'm thinking very similar to yours, which is I don't expect this to be 2.5 hours. I'm expecting it to be somewhat shorter than that. Mm-hmm. And I'm sure you guys run into this with maybe similar people. So if I do have to meet with this person and this comes up, what do you do?
We'll answer this question, but we definitely want to answer questions about non-scripted feature. But I will say, if you can accurately project what's on the page, how you're going to translate that, you got to be able to convince that person that it's not going to end up being as long as it is. Based on your script pages, it's definitely going to be that long, it seems like. Mm-hmm. But if you can explain it a different way, then I'm sure you'll be fine. Next question.
Oh, wow.
Yes.
Hi, I'm Jeff. Grew up in Wadsworth, Ohio, not far from Canton. Mm-hmm. I'm just, I get the sense you would all agree that a lot of the process is at the service of the actor and the performance. But I'm wondering, given that, if there are discussions about the look of the film or production design, if that is part of it, or if it's really, they all kind of have the same aesthetic because they have to.
Definitely huge talks about the look and huge talks about production design. And maybe this is sort of a bigger thing, but you're capturing these performances, and a lot of the films tend towards naturalism and maybe heightened naturalism. I think that in the way that you create a situation to make a film and let it grow, a lot of these films will be people talking in rooms. You can create a room. You can create a room ahead of time. You can create a room based on preparation with your actors and your directors and your producers. And you can light a room. You can light a room. You can only light it so well, but you can light that room, and you can get people moving in a room. And I think the creation of the world, the visual world, and Nat can talk a little more about the storytelling world, but it's that preparation is very similar. But I think it's more broad brushstrokes. It's not, we need that prop. It's we know this apartment. We know this character. We know that sunlight is coming in the windows, and like move around accordingly and try and stay out of the dark spots, but Nat can maybe talk about it a little bit in terms of like the texture and the feel of the storytelling.
Yeah, well, I mean, you kind of hit it, but definitely a lot of it. I mean, obviously, you're still going to have discussions about the visual look, and like you would on any other film, but definitely a lot of it is, without doubt, at the service of the actors. Like, it really is about naturalism and realism, and, I think the directors really just want these rooms to feel like real rooms, these real people, just everything at the service of the actors to make this feel like a real experience, to have these be real people that they were seeing on screen. So the production design, everything is going to be very minimal. A lot of times, I mean, I guess we have had production designers on... At least, well, maybe half of them, but there's definitely some things here and there that we'll definitely be doing, that are very pointed and intensive. But a lot of time, we're just going into rooms and shooting them pretty much as is.
Yeah, so a lot of it's budgetary. I mean, the budgets are getting bigger, so you start to see things a little more, they're a little more built. But I don't think
avoid white walls. Yeah. Just like white walls are awful.
They're awful.
They're awful.
But what you're saying, I think, is important. It's like it doesn't, because you're improvising something, and maybe and probably if you're in this room, you're looking at making a film with a low budget, it doesn't mean that there's no visual language. It doesn't mean that there's no feeling to it. You can totally build all those things, but you look at it as like building like larger environments that are broader brushstrokes, and not you don't get every single prop you wanted, because you don't know what you need until you get into the story.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, my name is Carl. I'm from San Francisco. I'm a filmmaker. That was sort of.
Carl Sturgis?
Is that better?
Yeah, that's me.
Oh, hey, what's up, man?
How's it going? Carl from San Francisco, filmmaker. That was kind of my question, but I guess elaborating on that, it's really, like, environment's really interesting to me. I've made a documentary about human experience in a space. And so I'm wondering, going off of that idea that you were just talking about, maybe each one of you guys can talk about it from your own perspectives, but how does that enhance the performance maybe? Like, do the actors actually kind of realize that that's a real space, not get caught up in the fact that it's a set designed, not get caught up in the fact that there's all these lights going on? So does it feel, do they end up getting more into their character, or, providing maybe a better...
Well, I'm looking at you. Just start talking. No,
costume and setting helps everything when you perform, and informs kind of a lot of decisions, especially, and that's where you can get collaborative with a production designer. On Allison's movie, and even on Joe's movie, even on Silver Bullets, Jade Healy, who is brilliant and does Ty West movies, and she is so spot on, and I don't know, she's like a whole warehouse full of stuff, and she loves doing small movies because she loves making things look like they're not production designed. And if you can find a gem like her, or like even my production designer, Lainey Faith Marie, who was on Your Next too, they love doing these movies where it doesn't look like it, and they come up with these crazy ideas. Like, they have these really beautiful like color schemes and that just blend into these realities. But if you want to.
No, I mean, as far as like the shooting of it, or the sort of the production end of it. For me, it's you have to remove the machinery of filmmaking. Like it's with this idea of improvising a film, that there's kind of a thought that the technical requirements of making a film are completely at odds with the performance involved in making a film. And, mm-hmm. and you know, Amy might be able to speak to that. But my thought is like back the lights off, back the cameras away, keep everybody handheld because I don't want actors waiting around while I reset a tripod for 20 minutes. You know, it does make things tricky as a DP, but I feel like it's much worse for me to encroach on a performance on a film that's entirely reliant on a performance to capture whatever it is it's trying to say.
Mm-hmm. I don't know. And yeah. Just to ascribe, I think, a quote to somebody. Oh, she left. But I was going to say an actress from a movie we call Hump Day, who was sitting over
she
there a second
there.
Ago.
She didn't want to get hounded for autographs.
I could be wrong. I don't want to falsely ascribe this quote to her, but didn't she say that there were times on that movie she forgot the cameras were rolling? She forgot we were there. You know, that rather than just, you know, you have to stand, rather than being on a scripted thing where you're standing on a mark and you've got a light right here in your face, you know, that everything's so backed off, the cameras, the lights, everything, that there were times where she would slip out of it and just forget that she thought she was talking to a real person, forget that, you know, she was making a movie.
But as a performer, I mean, how does that work for you, Amy? You've done this a bunch.
Do I forget that the camera's rolling and I get uncontrollable?
Yeah. You just blow money on Super 16 film stuff?
I don't. Yeah, I just go roll. I'll find something in here. No, I turn the camera on. I'll be brilliant. All right.
Incredible.
I'm directing this thing now. And it's your job to what's really, I mean, this goes on to a whole other thing and there's a lot of questions, but you want to get swept up in emotion, but I never forget the camera's rolling. That's impressive. I get swept up in the moment, but I can't, like, when someone yells cut, like, I'm like, I'm not suddenly like, oh my God.
I've been sleepwalking.
Well, the time machine
works.
You're
here. Where am I? Yeah. But that's impressive if she can do that.
Yeah,
shit.
Right.
So, I mean, no, not shit. Shoot.
Darn.
let's have some more diversity here. Yes, ma'am.
Yeah.
You, mama. You.
I'm Allie from Austin. My question is, how do you go about getting someone established in the industry, if I'm not established in the industry, to produce a film that is mostly improvised?
Ooh.
Yeah, I ended up in the right place.
Let's let Barry say this so we don't say anything dumb.
Yeah, I know, right? Well, I think what these guys have been saying is that making these movies, they're so small that generally you don't go out and get someone to produce them. Usually a band of friends get together and just go out and make them. And the overhead is so low that you can afford to basically do it yourself. We haven't said DIY or mumblecore up here.
Which is awesome.
I love DIY. I think it's so cool.
But I think it's all tied into this style of making, which is not to wait for someone to produce or to grant you access, but to just go out with the tools available and
steal shots. Like I think for like the first one, like you really can't play by the rules. You just like whatever it takes, and that's like that's why I probably will never produce a large movie. Is like I don't really play by the rules when I'm producing. I like buy, cheat, and steal, and like pretend like we're shooting home movies, we steal shots, you know. And it's really just the bottom line is just to get a movie made. And I said that to Allison when we were getting her movie. She's like, "Do you think it's possible?" Because it was like a really ambitious. We were going to shoot in like 3 weeks or something. And I was like, I'll get the movie made. And then it's up to you to like assemble it. But really, it's just like whatever it takes to get it done is you should just start shooting. Really.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, like on Barry's film, it was literally a five or six person crew.
Yeah.
And all of them friends from film school, everybody's first movie. And that's, you know, if you're looking to get more established people, I would say, you know, just go make your movie with friends. And then, you know, if that one's good, then you just keep building your way up.
You know, I'll give a technical answer too. We have some very famous friends who are now making these kinds of movies in the studio system.
Yeah.
And the studio system is afraid of them because when you come back with 4 hours of footage, there's no one to go, oh, I know where the scene is, so cut it this way. They can't, you know, because there's so much footage, it's up to the editor.
And you're justifying a 10-month post-production.
Exactly. Yeah. And so it's going to be extremely hard for you to get someone established in the industry to come into a situation like that because they don't know what to do in a situation like that.
Also, don't lie, cheat, and steal. I don't know why that came out of my mouth.
Amy's MS officially endorses
this. This is being
lying,
tweeted across the universe.
Don't do that. I don't know why. That just sounded cool. I was just trying to be cool.
But there's one more thing I do want to say is that if you are in the business end of this, in the sort of distribution end of this, the stakes are so low financially, and the output, even with a minimal film sale, your chance at making your money back is exponentially higher. I don't know, like Nat and I were involved very luckily with a couple films where we worked for points, and it actually paid.
That's
and
nice.
And it paid, it was like, I didn't expect it. Nobody expected it. They were just good projects, but it does happen. And that, like, the fact that, like, make that first film, make it and do your best and, maybe the second,
and
third.
And then make a second film.
Yeah, exactly. Make both films, shoot them both at once, because your second film is going to be way harder. Barry can probably talk about that.
Yeah.
Questions? Yes, sir. You in the back. Mm-hmm. You, sir.
Yep.
Yeah, buddy. That's you. It's on you. Yeah, you got
good,
the mic.
Good point, man. People aren't knowing what's up.
Hi. My name is Asaf. I'm from here in Austin, Texas. And I've been naturally doing improvisation for about 21 years and now starting to get into improvised film. I'm curious about what, if any, prep work you do with your actors just on improvising together even before they get into, okay, now these are the characters, this is the story, these are the beats.
Mm-hmm. That's you, Amy. Mm.
well, I think it really varies with directing styles. It's like it depends with Joe Swanberg. You guys know him when I say Joe Swanberg, right? Because I keep saying that. But Joe, there are days where he just tells you to just start talking, and then you just start talking, and then a scene somehow. And usually the first few hours of that are really bad, and he like deletes in camera. And we start over.
It
doesn't even hit the editing room. And so then you start over, and whatever fills up a P2 card, basically. Uh-huh. But now a 5D. But it depends on how much money you have, really, or like how much time you have, or how accessible your actors are. Because if you can just go over and improvise scenes and build a scene based off that and kind of start improvising and you have access to them, then that's awesome. But a lot of times you don't have that time, and people don't have time, and they have jobs, and they can't do that. So, but it also just depends on the kind of movie you're making or your directorial style.
I think a lot more of it, as far as the prep is what you're asking about, I think a lot more of that is in the writing. Like, I know Lynn Shelton, who we've worked with on Hump Day, a movie called Your Sister's Sister that comes out this summer, she, rather than having the actors together rehearsing beforehand, she develops a story with them. Like, she brings this idea for a movie to them, and they really flesh out their characters together, and they start to build more, flesh out the rest of the story together, and that's really where a lot of the character work happens beforehand for them. And but as far as the actual acting, the actual improv, it's really just all happening on set, and that's part of why, a lot of times we'll reshoot a decent amount from the first day or two when everybody's kind of getting their footing.
So I'm sorry, I've completely ignored this side of the room. So you, sir, right here, yeah. And we got time for maybe like two more questions. Is there anybody here with the...
Long introduction, short question. Okay. Greg Ferris, University of Technology, Sydney, head of postgraduate media studies, organized a micro-budget filmmaking symposium last year and talked Bob Byington in the traveling 28 hours to talk at and show harmony in me. Three short questions. Nat, editing on location, is that an advantage or disadvantage for these sorts of productions? Mm-hmm. Multicam editing for you, if you're shooting multicam? And are any of you interested in coming to Australia next year for the next conference?
Be on location.
It's only 14 hours. We went halves with the Adelaide Festival and they stuffed up his trip. He went to Hong Kong and long story.
All right. Editing on location, huge advantage. Like, just the fact of, you're there cutting the previous day's footage, you're right there. But even aside from that, you can just walk 15 feet over to set. I personally hate being on set. It's such, just my ego can't handle it. Maybe, like, you know, you're feeling like an important collaborator as an editor, to all of a sudden when you show up as an editor on set, nobody cares about you whatsoever. You're basically on the level of a PA. Everybody's ignoring you, like, yeah, whatever. And so you're just like standing in the corner by yourself. So I don't like visiting set, but being by set is huge for just being able to, you know, talk to the director at night and say, we need to pick up the scene, just, you know, have that dialogue just right there in the moment. And multicam, yeah, we use two cameras, and then we bring into Final Cut and use the multicam feature. So you're just looking at on your, I can't even remember what they call the canvas or view or whatever, as you're watching it play, you know, you're just watching the two takes side by side. And so you're still just cutting for story and performance and just grabbing the chunk that you want. And it definitely makes, I mean, continuity obviously is much easier. You just flip between. What's that? Mm-hmm. Yeah, definitely. And it would just be cutting. But yeah, sometimes you got to watch for that because it's so easy to flip back and forth between one shot and the other. You got to just make sure that you're using the same thoughtfulness you would if you were taking, if it was just one camera shoot where you were taking one take and then going to the next take, and not just like, you know, getting ping ponged where it's just, you know, fun to jump back and forth.
I've watched this guy cut. He's like, he'll be sitting there and he'll be like, he'll have his finger and he'll like he'll just feel it. He'll know when the moment hits. And like every edit is that way. It's like, no, I'm joking.
Yeah, you might be exaggerating a little bit.
I saw you do it once though.
We should raise our hands if we want to go to Australia next year.
I'll go to Australia.
I'll come.
That's four people that'll go to Australia.
All right, we got time for one last question. You, sir, in the back there. You right there.
You're in the back.
My name's Jeff Morrison. I'm from Toronto, Canada. And yes. I made an unscripted film called No Heart Feelings that... you know, we got distribution and TV and VOD deals in Canada, and it, you know, was favorably reviewed. It's totally watchable.
That's very Canadian. That's a
big accomplishment for your film.
Totally watchable. Totally watchable. Totally watchable. Sales pitch.
Totally watchable.
Some people liked it.
They weren't your friends.
It didn't unsuck. Yeah.
We, you know, we submitted to South By and next at Sundance and San Francisco and Seattle and... didn't get into really any of the festivals we submitted to in the States. So I'm wondering, sorry, this is kind of on the distribution festival end. Mm-hmm. Where are some other good places to look that are kind of a good home for these kind of unscripted films?
Yeah, for sure. I mean, there's kind of there's a lot of springtime festivals that kind of program a lot of South By movies that we love, like the Sarasota Film Festival, yeah. Independent Film Festival, Boston, Maryland. Those are great regional festivals.
River Run, Nashville.
Woodstock.
Woodstock is awesome, yeah.
But there's a decent amount, like half dozen festivals that are really great regional festivals that program a lot of South By
films.
Yeah, a
good thing to do would be to take a festival film that seems similar to your film and just track and see where it played and then apply to those festivals. You know, I'm going to give you the last question, boss, because, you know, I pointed at you and then it was kind of confusing. So you got the last question, man. You can just shout it.
Yes.
And New Movement Films, my business partner here. And as when it comes down to unscripted financing, for when it comes down to getting investors, how important is your treatment, because the fact there's no script? How important is your treatment and having casting happen before before you actually start sending the treatment out?
I just wanted you guys, you've seen Len go through it quite a bit.
We've worked with a director that's gone through it in many different varieties, from having a treatment and a movie with three characters in the woods that came to South By years ago. Effortless. That was the other one. My Effortless Brilliance. So we came with that.
Which looks really, really fucking good, man, I gotta say.
That's really nice of you to say. Thank you.
It was like a DIY film with like tons of mood and motivated camera. I mean, it was like a really solid effort, my friend.
Oh, thank you. Sorry. I think we met that year.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But we work with the director who's gone through like that version of it, where it was everything was self-financed and it was more of an experiment. It happened to be a feature.
And it was her friends that she
cast
in it.
And it was her friends that worked on it and for very little money, but it was a really good project. And then the next one was someone they met on the festival circuit. And Mark Duplass was involved with Hump Day, and that sort of got us a little bit more festival visibility, I'm sure, because he sort of had been through the ranks of Sundance and South By. And then on Your Sister's Sister, because Hump Day was a bit of a success, there was a little bit of a Hollywood swagger behind it, maybe. Mm-hmm. So we were able to approach name actors because Lynn was doing something that was performance-friendly and was, as a as an independent film financially viable. It was a model of filmmaking
and
that seemed to
work. And shorts, I guess we haven't mentioned, are insanely short. I mean, we shot Your Sister's Sister
in nine days, ten days, whatever.
Incredibly short.
Yeah,
and so for somebody like Emily Blunt, who acts in the movie, we could go to her and say, you know, this, you can fit this in between two other movies, you know, between two other movies, a period where you weren't otherwise planning on working, and just kind of squeeze it into your schedule. I don't know if we totally answered your question, but...
All right, we just got this symbol, which is illegal in most states, but it's Texas, so you can do it here. So they're cutting us off.
Oh.
That is the end. Thank you guys very much for
sitting through
out
that.
To this panel.